Hi, my name is Sarah Tulloch, Talking Writing's podcast production manager, and this is the Talking Writing Podcast. Please enjoy the episode. Hello, and thank you for joining us today, everyone. I'm really pleased to introduce our guest today, Ms. Nadia Pupa, and she is the co-founder and CEO of Peak Publishing. She is a developmental editor and a publisher, and she is also a podcast host of The Editor's Half Hour. And in our last conversation, Nadia, is it right that you're transitioning more towards book coaching and publishing coaching rather than strict editing? Because now you have like a big team for Peak Publishing.
Yes, that's right. So I'm not really taking away anything. I'm actually adding on. So adding on, you know, book coaching, manuscript evaluations, and I am adding a lot of people to my team to help me and to support me on the copy editing, developmental editing side. So I myself am not doing as much of that copy editing work, but more of the coaching and evaluating of manuscripts.
And most of our audience right now are authors, aspiring authors, writers, and publishers as well. And so I wanted to dive into like how it's not a common path for an editor to actually, you know, it's a very solitary occupation, right? And it's not a common path for editors to actually want to expand into a publishing company and be sort of like an agency for talented editors, graphic designers, and all of that. So what gave you the idea or what need drove you to develop Peak Publishing?
You're so right. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, I started out as a solo editor. I would take one project at a time. And it got to a point where I didn't want to say no to projects just because my schedule didn't allow it. And so my company grew in that way. I thought, well, I can say yes to more projects if I had some help. And that's really what happened was, you know, the requests were coming in and the requests were coming from different angles. It's not just authors. I work with corporate clients as well. And so there's magazine design, magazine development, editorial calendars. And so I thought, well, if I had a team and it wasn't just me, we could really accomplish a lot. And that's how it slowly grew. And so that's really what I do is I offer those publishing services on all different angles and for different client perspectives, I should say. So not just an author, but really an organization that might need that help. And it just grew and grew and grew. And I also have that entrepreneurial spirit that really drove me and made me realize you can really grow a company with that mindset. So it's a combination of a lot of things that kind of got me into it. But the last thing I want to mention is that design, the graphic design aspect of what I do really lend itself to creating and building that team.
Yeah, and I was going to say that the entrepreneurial side of, I think each editor has an entrepreneurial side, but yeah. it's not usually like developed into like forming a team. You know, most of the editors that we both know are sort of became editors because they want to work, you know, on their own and then just collaborate, have a collaborative relationship, but not really like manage their own team, right? And right. I'm curious to know, do you have an entrepreneurial background then that sort of informed this change, this transition?
I don't at all. I did not study business. I do not have an MBA. I thought about getting an MBA at one point. And then I thought, oh, that seems like a lot of time, a bit major commitment from me. And I was working full time and I didn't want to give up a steady income. I was a full time employee.
Yeah.
But I did. It's one of those things I think it kind of is part of my background. So I'm Lebanese. I'm 100% Lebanese. And a lot of Lebanese people have, they're very business savvy, I should say. They're business owners. We thrive in environments where we are our own boss. And I think that it's like in my blood. It's in my blood to be a business owner. Several family members are business owners. And I think that's what inspired me to take that leap and really start to look at myself as a business versus just a freelancer.
I feel like that is such a big influence too. Like, even if you're not directly, your family probably never directly involved you, but seeing that happen, having that modeled to you by the people around you is a big
Yes,
thing. And so
it
you're for
is.
you probably it's like, oh yeah, it's possible to do it not just one way, but another. I also feel like, you have your podcast, Editor's Half Hour. And I feel that a lot of your events, your mission for Peak Publishing is all about giving support. And that leads me to ask, like, how did you gauge what kind of support your authors and the fellow editors who joined you, how did you gauge what kind of support they needed?
It's a great question because what it requires is listening. I think being a good listener is so important to hear what is needed. What kind of support do editors need? What kind of support do writers need? And paying attention and listening to what is needed helped me. And so that's what launched the whole business service line into manuscript evaluations for authors. Authors were coming to me and my book is done. It's the best I could possibly get it. And they handed it over to me and like, we're ready for editing. And then the editing process would begin. And then all of a sudden it's like, hold up. We just discovered a major flaw, a major issue in the manuscript. And it really put a halt to the editing process because then the author needed to rewrite and reassess some things. So is that a clean editorial process? No. It became a headache. It became annoying on both sides because now my work ended, and then the commitment on income had to stop because I didn't finish the project. Why should I get paid for the full, so that didn't make sense. And then the author's annoyed because the author realized, well, this really is something I need to fix. And so then it opened up my eyes to realize I don't know if the author, yes, the author needed an editor, of course, but the author wasn't ready. And that's when I realized, okay, let's evaluate what's there. If nobody else has read it, other than, you cannot include friends and family. They don't count. They're going to say, great
I
job.
agree with that.
They're going to give you a pat on the back and say, great job. No, it needs to be evaluated. And that was such an eye-opening experience for me. And then I started to listen to more clients. As they talked to me, they were like, oh, did you like it? Did you like the book? And I'm like, well, yes. And then secretly in my heart, I thought, well, there were some things I didn't like, but they weren't paying me to give them an evaluation. They were paying me to edit. And that's what I did. And so then I realized there's a missing piece here. There's a big, big missing piece. And if more authors were made aware that there is a process, not required, obviously, this is not required, but it's so helpful for self-published authors to get their manuscripts evaluated. To figure out if, let's say, they're trying to insert a little tiny sense of humor throughout, or like a little pieces or nuggets of information, but there's a little bit of a twist that where they're inserting their humor. Was it funny? Did it resonate? Did it connect with the reader? Sometimes those things fall flat. Sometimes the intended purpose or, a play on words didn't quite get there. And so then it's just becomes like an awkwardly worded sentence. Or, sometimes it does really crack me up and it's hilarious. And I'm like, this book is amazing. Authors need to hear that, so that they know that it's been read by a professional editor. And who better than an editor to tell the author, this book is hilarious, or this part is so dramatic. If it's fiction, the pacing and the flow and the developing of these characters, the development was so great. They need those compliments, but they need to find out what those weaknesses are as well. And so let's do that first, and then let's edit so that we don't have to stop the project halfway through. So I know I'm rambling a little here, but I think that was, to answer your question, that's what made me identify a missing piece in the self-published process is listening to what was really happening. Like, how could we have prevented this? And then realizing that's really what the need was, is giving that feedback to the author.
You touched on so many points there that I
I know,
want to
I'm sorry.
discuss. You didn't ramble at all, but it's because editing, just like writing, has so many nuances. And when people think about editing, it's always about proofreading, which is like only a tiny part of what editing is,
I
or even
know.
copy editing, right? And
Right.
so like if you're an editor and you've been trained, professionally trained, of course you know about a manuscript evaluation, but
Yeah.
your author might not know to ask for it, right? And
Right.
then like there's the piece where you want to communicate it in a way that doesn't sound like, and you're not trying to fleece the author for more, more
No, yeah.
engagement, but it's really a need.
Yeah.
Me and also a lot of editors I know have had that experience where they've had to shift what was supposed to be a copy editing engagement and shifted it to a manuscript evaluation instead because
Yeah.
of exactly those factors that you mentioned.
Yeah.
And while we're here, because a lot of our audience are self-published authors as well, let's talk about, self-publishing and
Yeah.
the image of self-publishing as being, low quality compared to traditional publishing, which is not true. And I feel like a lot of misconceptions about that is just that the available resources out there for self-published authors or authors who want to self-publish are not as easily transparent as
Yeah.
someone who works with a publisher who will exactly know, what they need, and especially that. And so I know you focus on self-published authors,
Yeah.
right? And so
Yep.
how do you answer the question, like, what path is for me, self-publishing or traditional publishing?
Yeah. That is it's one of those questions that there's not a one all be all for everything for everyone. It's really, really circumstantial. And so the majority of people who are really excellent and excellent candidates for the self-published process are people who have an established following, fan base. If there's a very, very strong need or a high demand, they are going to excel and sell through the roof, and the possibilities are endless with self-publishing in that situation. For somebody who is a true thought leader expert, maybe self-publishing isn't the right path, because if they are a researcher or if they're a practitioner in their industry, they may not have the time to put into marketing. They might, you know what I mean? So that's a self-published thing. So if they are, like I said, expert, subject matter expert, thought leader, they might have a very good chance of getting published through an academic publishing house or academic publisher. Even if they're not a professor, that it doesn't matter. I mean, if they are an industry expert, they are needed somewhere. Somebody needs to hear what they have to say, what they have to share. And so there's that route. I mean, it's all based on who the author is, what they're trying to accomplish. If they're trying to sell a business book, then maybe they should self-publish and use that and obviously benefit from all of the sales that they'll receive and use that as a platform to possibly get speaking engagements and speak at conferences. So there is a business behind books, but self-published may not be it's not the only option, obviously. But it might not be the best option depending on the author's goals. It's always based on the author's goals. Is the author writing fiction? Is the author writing nonfiction? If so, what type? What's the genre? What will give them the most success? And there are so many, I think for authors to hear this, there are so many red flags. If you meet an editor or somebody in the publishing industry that tries to push you in one direction, that this is the only direction, you can only self-publish, that's wrong. An editor should say, here are the paths, here are the options, and let the author decide. An author should never be swayed one way or another on what they should do. They just need to be given those options. And that's what I do, especially at peak publishing. If I'm reading a book that I think is exceptionally well written, it's an amazing topic, If I truly believe that they have a chance at going the traditional route and getting a book deal, I will let them know. I'll say, this book is really good. I mean, really good. Like, it really, really, you know, lends itself to a mass audience, mass appeal. I will say you should consider doing a book proposal, consider querying agents, and go that traditional route. It's based on the author's goals, based on the quality of the manuscript and the content that's written, you know, who is the audience. And so there's several factors to consider. But going back to the self-publishing space, there is a lot that you will have to put those the energy and effort into.
To like take on, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's important to say also that just because one way of publishing didn't work out doesn't mean that manuscript needs to be shelved forever. Right. You know, that's not the end of the journey. That's why there are different paths to publishing. We've had authors on who have queried for 10 years and have had to obviously evolve their manuscript because their goal is really to get a book deal. But as an alternative, if the goal of the author is to have a book that she can leverage for speaking, as you said, then self-publishing mm-hmm. might be a better route because it'll fit into her timeline, right?
As
you said, it's like it depends on the goal, but it's also like not the end of the world if it doesn't work out on one area or another.
Exactly. Right? And that's what's so appealing about the self-publishing world is it's available to everyone.
Yes.
You can't get rejected. You own the book. And there's so much beauty behind being the owner. It's like being a business owner. There's a lot of beauty behind that and a lot of control. And quite honestly, the industry has evolved over time and has become more sophisticated.
Yep.
People can now see quality editing, quality writing, quality design, and all of that speaks volumes in the self-published world. So, you know, early, mid-2000s, books were looking really bad. You know,
I know.
Self-publishing had a bad reputation, you know, self-published, ew. You
know, I know.
That doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Now people have caught on. Oh, I need to have it edited. I need to have it professionally designed, not by just a graphic designer, but by a book designer.
Exactly.
You know? So there's a difference there too. And doing that research and seeing what's out there, it's a lot. It's a lot to navigate for an author. I really, it's sad because it's too much and it's overwhelming. But encouraging authors to have those conversations with editors, more than one editor,
yes,
is highly recommended. Highly yes. recommended. Have and, those conversations, you know?
Exactly. It's like you don't have to settle for one thing or the other anymore,
no.
You know?
Yes.
A lot of the things that were not accessible to self-publishing authors are now, you can now search for it. You can now even referral, you know, because that there's a huge, you know, it's a really growing industry and even becoming a very profitable industry, self-publishing. Local Barnes and Nobles will carry self-published authors
in
their community. So there's that's also another big change, right? But I also wanted to touch on the factors that influence that. As you said, like the look, you know, there was a look before that, oh my God, this looks horrible. But now it's different. And one of the things we talked about in our call before was that Peak Publishing has this built-in resource of good book designers, which are all always like missing from a lot of, you know, self-publishing providers. Usually it ends with like, okay, your manuscript is ready to publish. You can choose, you know, to go with KDP or like Ingram Spark. but then, okay, how do I do the cover, right?
Right.
So
right.
How did this evolve in Peak Publishing? When did you start offering that solution?
You know, it goes back to before I started my company. I've always done design, but not just graphic design, book design. I did not have a degree in graphic design. I'm not an artist. I'm not an illustrator. But I learned basic page design, page layout, you know, margins, bleeds, all the technical aspects that go behind book design, book layout, was years before I started Peak Publishing. And I have to hand it to my husband. He's an industrial designer, so he understands design, like product design. And we met in college. He was my boyfriend at the time. And he said, you know, you should really learn book design. You should really open up, you know, Adobe InDesign and figure out how to use it. And I was like, no, I don't have time for that. You know, I'm an editor. My goodness. You know, editors don't design the books. They edit the books. And so I lived in that space for a while, you know, denying that was a skill that I could even, you know, it was just, I didn't act like, maybe because I was opinionated and very young, I thought it was beneath me. Like, oh, I can't possibly lower my standards and design a book. But guess what? I did. I finally swallowed my pride and realized that is so, so extremely important. Bridging that gap between the content and design and having that conversation early on changes the game. And so I had jobs where it was required of me to learn at the time Quark and PageMaker before InDesign even existed.
Oh my gosh. Yes, we are showing our age.
Age. I am old. People are like, oh no. I'm like, no, I am old. I used Quark. I was in a newsroom designing news articles and it would crash. It was horrible. And now the, you know, like I said, things get more sophisticated over time as time evolves or the industry evolves. I've now, you know, InDesign is the premier software program for page layout. And so when I started Peak Publishing, it was actually offered very early on in the company that we offered graphic design, page design services. So yeah, there's a lot to it. But what's changed the game on the self-published author side is those conversations are happening much earlier in the process. So let's say I'm working with an author who's doing nonfiction and they have a business book and the author has written really great key points that really lend themselves to a visual, a nice infographic. I will ask the author, I will engage the author in conversation about infographics, additional sidebars, how they want that book to look and feel when it's finally done. So my focus isn't just on content and you know, editorial decisions. It's on the full-blown treating that book almost like a product. Well, what does that look and feel? What is the personality of that book? That needs to be connected with the content. And so those conversations happen much early on. Mm-hmm. And the author's like, yes, I will do an infographic, maybe just one, because, you know, there is a cost associated with that. So whatever that author has in their budget, I'm explaining to them that they do need to budget for those additional graphics if it's important to them. Those graphics, they can then be used on social media. It'll attract readers that way to show, hey, look at this cool thing, infographic, and here's the book to read more. And it'll really get that reader engaged and excited about making that purchase.
Yeah. And because, books are an experience.
Yes.
So, you know, you said product, but I think like it is a product, but it's also an experience for the reader or for the people that she speaks to when she becomes a speaker and uses the book, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
The book is part of the experience. And so the design, the images, the graphics inside the book, they all come into play. Whereas, and as an author, like you need somebody outside who can help you do that. Because if you're a writer, you know, your job is to write.
Right.
But what do you think about that? Because I would say that you're no longer just an editor and you're not exactly just a publisher, right? You deal with the bigger picture and all the nuances of book publishing. How do you feel about that support role? Like, I feel like so many editors have expanded in one way or another in their own genres to provide this support. How do you feel about expanding that? You already told us about how you felt about expanding as a designer. But like, what about expanding in your role as Speak Publishing? Why do you think, or should editors do that in the first place?
I do think so. I really, really think so. I think editors are such a valuable asset to the publishing process. You cannot publish a book without an editor. I mean, it's just not possible. And I think that's where it really aligns with that editorial role. And I view the editorial role as a partnership. It's not, yes, it's a professional service that you're providing clients, but in a partnership role, the editor is always looking at things an editor should always view what is best for the writer. So it's almost like a doctor-patient scenario, or maybe a movie and a movie director role. Like, the editor would be that director or the doctor, the person who is making decisions for the betterment of the book, you know, to improve the content or to really, really give that writer that presence that they deserve for their content. So yes, to answer your question, yes, I wholeheartedly believe that editors should add services that are adjacent to what they do. And that's what I've done, which is a manuscript evaluation, which is not editing. It's feedback, really in-depth feedback that then carries into the editing process. If editors are interested in design, by all means do it, because it's adjacent to what you're doing. And you will then have more meaningful, strategic conversations with the clients in that way when you understand the entire process. So there are companies out there that offer these services. Some of them, they build their companies differently. But as a business owner, if I don't know anything about design and yet I'm offering that service, wouldn't you question the owner? Or even, you know, yes, an owner doesn't need to know every single, like a restaurant owner doesn't have to be the chef as well. I get that. But in publishing though, if the owner of the company does not know the first thing that there is to know about book design, you know, you're at a loss now. Now you're a client that maybe has an issue with the design, and you're going to the owner and you're explaining the issue, and the owner's like, well, I don't understand. I think it looks great to me. You know? So I think that there's so much to be said for what the editors do, which is the heart of publishing a book.
Yeah.
If they could add on more of those adjacent skills, that would not only uplift the editor, but really shine a light on what's going on here. Like, what are you doing? You're publishing a book. Okay. What kind of a book, you know, what genre? That editor has more answers to questions than they realize. And so that's another part of that support. Going back to your question about supporting the editors, editors are like that missing piece in that process sometimes, where they have so much more insight than they realize. And some editors don't share their voice as much as they should with the author. Maybe they're too shy, or maybe they don't think that
they feel like overstepping or something.
Yeah, overstepping, or that their opinions don't matter. But their opinions matter so, so much, probably more than anybody else on the team.
Yeah, because editors are not just support, but like the bridge, as you said, right? For the whole process. Another word I like to use for editors is like they're the advocates for the authors.
Yes.
You just can't help it, because, you know, that is part of you taking on that responsibility for the manuscript. But you mentioned a while ago, and I think this will be my last question, but you mentioned a while ago, like, authors need to have these conversations with their editors and publishers. But editors also, you brought up an interesting point there, should speak up and also have these conversations with authors. What do you think could help facilitate that kind of exchange, like in, because publishing is changing every day, right? Like, how do you think that interaction could be facilitated?
You know, it's always goes back to the author's goals. If the author is intending to connect with a specific audience, you know, it may require they will have specific needs. And so as an editor, if you're understanding, okay, their audience is a general audience, or their audience is more advanced in their profession, you then know what kind of questions to ask. And so I do have a journalist background. I started out wanting to be a journalist, and I think it's helped me tremendously because I know how to ask those questions. If I understand what's important to the author, then I know what the author, what support that author needs. And then I can then dive deeper and ask those questions. So then to facilitate that proper support that they need. So why would I go on and on and on talking to an author about something that is completely irrelevant to them? You know, so I really guide the author. There's no black and white, but you could put together a checklist or an intake form or something like that to help facilitate those conversations so you don't forget, which is, there's nothing wrong with that and being organized. I wish I was more organized, but I'm very much organic in the conversations I have with my clients. I don't put them in a box and say, check, 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 you know, down the list of questions. I will steer that conversation to follow what they're looking for. What are their interests? Who is their audience, their target? You want to make sure that you can hit that target. I've heard a story of an author who I think self-published, gained a lot of recognition for her book. She was on Good Morning America and, you know, went all the way. I mean, really got that, you know, this is the dream that self-published authors want. She got on the show, did her thing, talked about her book. You're thinking, oh my God, she probably sold thousands and thousands of copies. There was a disconnect between her message and the content. And the author sold like maybe 100 copies, which is not bad, but you're on a national platform here. You know, 100 copies at a conference is great. 100 copies at a national and a national, you know, broadcast, that's not very good. And so it all went down to cover design, the content, the message, what she was saying in the interview, nothing connected. It was just like, what? And so it was really, really interesting to hear about this because it goes back down exactly to what I'm saying, which is, what is the mission? Is it connected all the way through?
And you'll only know that like through listening and communicating, yes. Right? And it's interesting that you mentioned that you had a journalism yeah. background, right? Yeah. Like these leaning into your strengths would also help facilitate those conversations, and everything connects. So mm-hmm. that's the message that I'm getting here, is that the author's goal, everything from the editing of the manuscript, the writing, the editing of the manuscript, the design, because it also gives you the message, how the book looks will also attract certain people.
Yeah.
Oh, and if yes. you're not attracting the audience that you want to attract through the design, they're not even going to read even a single word of it, right?
Yeah.
Like it's opportunity lost.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And would you say that, you know, listening and communicating, like, would you say that empathy is like one of the biggest values that editors...
I think so. Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. I do agree. Yes, empathy is so important. Editors know how to empathize. They know how, whether they agree or not with the content, that's irrelevant. Editors know how to really get in there and be like, okay, if you're trying to connect with a certain crowd, you know, you would use these terms. These other terms over here, they have maybe could have a negative connotation. They could come off as snarky, you know, and you might not connect. So yeah, empathy is really, really true on a baseline, you know, skill that editors have. It's one of those things for sure.
And I, you know, we're an interesting bunch too, because I feel like, okay, we're such an important part of the publishing process, but it's also not it's not routine to acknowledge the editor right? And to be
Right.
honest, I never had a problem with that. Like most editors don't have a problem with not being front and center. For you, like, do authors still ask you, like, should I put you in the acknowledgement section? And how do you feel about that with editors, like, being such a part of the background? Is it good or
Yes.
bad in your opinion?
I can go both ways. I have had authors ask. I've had authors take it upon themselves to put me in the acknowledgments. I'm totally fine with that. It makes me feel really, really good. It makes me feel recognized and seen sometimes to have that. Other times I do not want my name there. The author was probably not listening to advice, or, you know, maybe decided to go rogue and quote unquote, I'm doing air quotes, decided to self-edit. They introduced errors. Why would I
Oh,
want my
man.
name? Why would I want my name on a book with errors? So, you know, that has not happened. That only happened once in my in career, very, very early on. It has not happened. I will say 9 out of 10, maybe 10 out of 10 cases. You know, it's the chances are very strong that I'm honored to be recognized and acknowledged. Is it required? No. You know, it depends on that relationship with the author, and it does mean a lot to me. Other authors want to protect themselves and say, take me out. Don't list my name. I want to be a ghost. They want to be, you know, they don't want the recognition, and that's okay too. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, authors, they want to protect their, themselves, and they don't want anybody to say, oh, well, look at these errors I found in this book that your name is, you know, that I don't know if anybody would go that deep and analyze and edits that way, but I do see that side of it as well. So for the authors listening, you know, it's up to you as the author, you're in charge, it's your book. If you truly connected with your editor and feel that they took your book or your manuscript to that next level, by all means, acknowledge them. You can ask for their permission or go ahead and do it and see what they say, just as long as they're made aware that their name is listed and recognized. But most cases, and I can't speak for all editors, but I have a feeling that most editors would be honored to be recognized in a
I
in a
think
book.
So. Well, it's not expected, honestly. And I
No.
echo what Nadia is saying here. Like, nobody would feel bad if we weren't, editors weren't recognized. I also, the other side of that, I think, is also that it would be good for especially beginning authors or like aspiring authors to know that there's so much that goes into writing and publishing a book. That it's not just, oh, this genius idea popped up in my head one day and look, I got it published. You know,
Right.
there's that initial image of you're so special, so you got published. And of course, authors are special, but also there are so many support people who supported them along the way to make it special, to make the book special, right? And so,
Exactly.
like, on the one hand, you know, it's not expected. On the other, it's like it would be good to see like just how much effort like went into that, right?
I know. And I think my goal in doing the podcast and, you know, focusing on editors and what editors do, what editors provide is it's not so much that editors need that recognition.
No.
It's that I think the general public needs to be made aware that editors have a price point. And that it should not be dictated by what, you know, other organizations think that the hourly rate should be. There are so many other factors that come to play for an editor's rate. There's experience. That's a big factor.
Yeah, specialization, like what kind of authors they've worked with, right?
Exactly. So experience is a huge, huge component of that. Also, the type of editorial work that went into it, what kind of level was required. And so that is what I want, that recognition. That is what I'm pushing for through the podcast, just spreading awareness on what is a realistic budget to self-publish. I had an author come to me and I'll just throw out a number. They had budgeted $5,000 for everything. I'm talking design, editing, publishing, distribution, printing. And I was like, oh my God.
I'm like, no.
Exactly. So I think that if you want to self-publish and you want to do do it right and you want to evolve as the industry has and become more sophisticated and appear the quality that, you know, there's no, right now there's the area is blurred, which is great because it's showing that a self-published book looks just as great as a New York Times bestseller. And that's what's happening now. And that's because the author has budgeted for an illustrator, a designer, maybe two editors, a proofreader, a project manager, you know, or they maybe have found each person on their own and went through the process, or they had someone like me as that project manager to guide them and find the right person for them, for the design or for the proofreading. So that's really what I'm getting at, is the recognition and awareness on how much does it really cost to publish a book? You know, $5,000, you could get a kid in college, you could get a kid in high school to edit your book for like $200. I mean, is that really what the quality want?
Yeah, but I mean, like, okay, like, yeah, maybe you can, you know, you can get one copy editor, right?
Right.
And maybe. Then you do the KDP route. The KDP route. Okay, so you have an ebook and then a print on demand book. That's possible with $5,000. Or
yes.
Ingram Spark. You can do your own cover design, do your own layout, the template, and then spend $550 for that. Okay, mm-hmm. Now you have another print on demand book. But, you know, there's a lot of nuances to that.
Yes,
you have that book. How are you going to promote it? You know,
where's and the money how is for it, marketing?
Yeah, right. how is it going to look like when you get your mm-hmm. proof and if there's a mistake with the cover bleed or whatever?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
the, you know, all of those headaches mm-hmm. that a professional designer and a professional like proofreader at the end of the process mm-hmm. would like take away from for you, yes. would do for you, right? Yes.
And the other aspect of like, neglecting, didn't even know, oh, there's the Library of Congress, there's the U.S.
Yes.
copyright. They think, oh, I put the copyright symbol in the book, I'm copyrighted, right? I'm like, no. You don't have to see the government document that says, yes. you know, the official copyright certificate from the government to send to you that you mm-hmm. truly do own the copyright.
Yeah.
So things like that, you know,
yeah.
there's so many little things that it's not that, oh, well, we just know better and who are
they? No, not
at
all.
That's not the attitude. It's giving that the authors every single piece of the publishing process, mm-hmm. explaining it to them, hand-holding them through it, which I'm totally fine doing. And then they will feel taken care of.
Yeah.
And that's what I try my best to do. You know, going back to the very beginning of the podcast, when you asked about, you know, what support is needed and how do you find out? It's having those conversations.
Yes.
You know, making the connection with the writer and then understanding if they know these things, good for them, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. that's awesome. But if they don't, you know, it would not, the editor is not, or the project manager is not serving them to the best and highest quality if they don't know the nuances of design or the nuances
that's right.
of the copyright process, all that.
And we're not saying that we're not saying it's pay to play in publishing.
No,
it's mm-hmm. we're just showing that there's so much more that goes into the publishing of a book if you want it a certain way. If you want it to be in the library, if you want it to be in Barnes & Noble and things like that. But if you're thinking about just distributing it, having a book because you just want it done, or just distributing it to a private organization or your family, of course, there's nothing stopping you from doing it, you know, the print-on-demand way. And as you said, you're glad. We are glad that that is an option, you know. But
it's
we are
good.
Just setting expectations for the goals of so many aspiring published writers.
Absolutely.
And I want to mention here, because you talk a lot about your process with Peak Publishing, I want to point out that there are reputable self-publishing platforms like yours or publishers like yours, because there's so many horror stories too and class action lawsuits of like previous vanity publishers who have really not delivered, you know, what they
Yeah.
promise to authors. And so what do you think authors should look out for that are red flags when they see like a self-publishing platform or company like yours? Yeah, what are the differences?
Oh my gosh, I think the red flags are things like publish your book in 30 days. Yeah, I know.
Yes. Oh my
And
God.
I love your reaction. That's let's get your book out in 30 days and here's
Oh
how.
my
Like,
gosh.
okay, great, do it. Like, let's just turn this into a sausage factory at this point. Like, that's what's so highly frustrating to me to see publish your book in 10 days even. I've seen something ridiculous. That's a major red flag. Red flags that promise bestseller.
Yes.
Understand authors need to understand what does it really mean. An Amazon bestseller campaign means that you played the system. It's a pay to play. You had a room full of whoever you know purchasing your book that pushes it up to number one for maybe 4 hours, maybe 24 hours at most, and they capture that screenshot that has their book at number one.
Yes.
Okay,
Yeah.
so you're
So
a number one
that's
seller for
gaming, yeah.
it's gaming the system. So
And we know how to do that too. So if they want that, you know, we can tell them how, but it's not a measure of merit, right? So
Yes, and I think that's the red flag. So not a red flag that they're saying that their book isn't. The red flag is if I use that as my grab to get the author and say, yes, you're going to be Emma. Like, this is going to make or break your book. Like, no, that is not the emphasis. That should not be your focus because the weight that that carries is, like you said, it's not merit. It's not, it's a system. It's a plug and play system. And so anytime you have a plug and play system, that's also a red flag. As I said earlier, you don't have to necessarily have somebody who knows who can do all of those things in the publishing process to, and that's not a red flag, but I think more of the red flag is making promises that they will sell a certain number of books. You cannot control sales. That is
No.
a major red
Mm-mm.
flag. The book in 30 days, I already said, kind of just that you can get that slimy vibe when you
Yeah,
know
I
the
think you know what
promises.
it is. Like
Yeah, it's like,
when it sounds like an infomercial,
yes.
you know, and then really double check if that celebrity really was published
Yeah.
there or if they were
Right.
paid to endorse.
Yeah.
There are
You know,
also sad instances where they'll mention a publisher
yeah.
and they'll say they're affiliated with a publisher, but the publisher has absolutely zero to
Zero
do with that.
clue.
I'm not going to
Yeah.
mention it here, but there's a class action lawsuit now
Oh, I know. I think I know what
against
you're talking
that.
about. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
There's a lot of red flags out there, and I think these are the major ones for me. I think when it feels too good to be true, when you're forking over a ton of money and you think that it's going to be they're just going to take care of it for you, whether it's ghostwriting or whatever the case may be. If they're making it seem like it can be done in 6 months, or I'm sorry, 6 weeks,
Yeah.
something so ridiculous is a truly a red flag. And
I
then
mean,
not
how come
knowing,
big publishers are not doing that, right? If it's so easy.
it's so easy. It could take 12 months or more. Like, let's be
More
real. And at a
usually, yeah.
major publishing company, it takes about that amount of time to publish a book. So when you see the 30 days, what does that 30 days really mean? You can put an outline together in 30 days,
You can
but
print
like
it, print the draft.
you can
I
print the
don't
book in
know.
30 days. The actual
Yeah.
printing process takes
Yeah.
30 days. Like, what is the 30 days? So really look into that as an author. I want to look out for those authors who are so excited about this, but it is not going to take. Give the What about design? Like, I can't. I just get so angry when I see
Yeah.
this.
Or like,
Don't
oh,
get your
you
book
won't
published.
have to do anything, but you know, that's not when you talk to even the biggest authors, even Oprah and Michelle Obama had to do a lot to promote the book in order, you know, check the galleys, everything. They did not sit pretty and
Yes,
like
I think that's
have
the
the
thing
book
is
written.
some authors do think, I'm not some, but there's this mentality out there, oh, just get it, just pay money and get it ghostwritten. And the author still needs to read it. Like, and some authors just want to get it done, but without that involvement, the book is not going to be nearly as great as it could be. So getting that, you know, involvement from the author, even if they're not writing it. I mean, yes, we also do ghostwriting at Peak Publishing, but we involve the author so much. It's almost as if they are actually doing the writing. But, you know, some authors have, they may be neurodivergent, maybe they're dyslexic. They have a book that they want to have done, but they need that support. So that's where I come in. How can I support the author? It's not going to be done in 30 days. You know, it's still going to take time. They're still heavily involved in all of the book coaching sessions. So yeah, it's a very long process for a reason.
And I know we're talking about like the horror stories and how and the process is not so easy, but we also want to end on a very encouraging note.
Yes.
It's like, yes. It's why is it still worth it? Why is it worth it to go through the publishing process, whether it's self-publishing or traditional publishing? Why do you think it's worth it?
I think it's worth it for the authors who are going in with, you know, stepping in with both feet. You know, for somebody who wants to go all the way, it is worth it for them to spend a significant amount of money. It's similar to purchasing a car. It's similar to that idea of I am putting in and investing in myself to publish a legitimate book that has been beta read, alpha read, edited, you know, every single process that is needed before it's out and published into the world without issues. And so I think on an uplifting note, taking yourself seriously and going that direction, the possibilities are endless, really and truly endless, especially for self-published authors who can sometimes get recognized by major publishing companies and then get a major book deal.
Yes.
And that has happened.
That's another thing that is not being talked about. Self-published authors who are picked up by traditional big publishers.
Yes. And again, both routes are great. They both have pros and cons. So be open-minded to those things and be open-minded to the fact that, you know, what you have to share as an author, if that quality is there, then that possibility is available to you as an author. And so, you know, yes, it is an expensive process to self-publish. You're taking on and carrying a lot of weight. But again, because you're doing that, you will see the results of your labor, of the time and money that you've invested into it. The quality will be there and it will be taken seriously. It won't be just one of those little throwaway pieces of a thin 30-page, you know, workbook. If it's, and you're calling it a book, but it's really just a workbook or a tiny thing. You know, editors will be realistic with you and explain to you what is really possible. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, that's my, I hope that
the,
was uplifting.
The encourage- that yes, was it's very encouraging.
It, you know, that if you get what you pay for, and that stands very true in publishing, don't view it as, well, I'll never make my money back. Well, is that the point? Is the point to make your money back? You know, when I go and get a haircut, do I say to the hairdresser, well, I'm not going to make my money back on that haircut, you know? And
exactly.
That's not the point. The point is, did I get the quality haircut that I paid for? Did you get the quality editing that you paid for? Because that's your reputation.
Yeah.
It's a really, really important for a business owner. The book and quality of the book is representative of the owner, the writer, you know?
It opens doors. And whether your writing is nonfiction or fiction, whether you're literary or commercial, you're writing for a reason. You're already, as you said, you're already all into writing. You believe in what the power of words can do. And so, you know, if you lean into it, you know, and just take stock of the fact that anything that is worth doing is hard, you know, it's rather difficult and will take time. You know, then, you know, putting that perspective into publishing would really, you know, make you not think about, oh, how do I make back my money? It's like, well, you know, it's a craft. Writing is a craft, and it's not, you know, it's not a product that you spewed out like in a factory or whatever. And so it needs to be valued in that way. It needs to be valued in a different way. Other than monetary, absolutely. Right?
Yes,
not saying that monetary is not important. We absolutely,
exactly Yes.
Authors absolutely need to be recognized and get paid. But at the same time, their use of writing goes beyond monetary.
Yes. And again, it goes back to what is the goal? What is the goal
Yes.
of the book? If the goal of the book is to make money, then go after the traditional route, try to get into, get a big book deal. But if the goal is to truly connect, share knowledge, supplemental
Reach
read
people.
material, reach people, if you're, like I said, an expert in your industry, and you have something valuable to share, that's your goal. So having that book is going to just really connect with your audience directly. So
Thank you
that's
very
me.
much, Nadia. This is
Thank you.
amazing. And
Thank
I'm sure
you.
our listeners are and readers, because this will be an article too, they will
Okay.
definitely get a lot of value out of this. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Writing Podcast. We're an independent literary site and nonprofit organization based in the Boston area, but with contributors from around the world. Since our founding in 2010, we've relied on donations to keep publishing and podcasting. To donate to TW, you can use the donate button on the rss.com page of this podcast or visit talkingwriting.com/donate. And of course, feel free to drop us a line at editor@talkingwriting.com.